Radio.
You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds, and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance, and dental care. This is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. Because your pet health matters. Please welcome your pet doctor host, veterinary media consultant, and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
Saying goodbye to a friend is always hard, and when it's a pet that's become a part of the family, it can be especially difficult. The need to allow a pet to pass on quickly, painlessly, and with dignity can be due to a myriad of reasons, from organ failure, uncontrollable medical conditions, crippling arthritis, cancer, senility, or other issues that rob your friend of a good quality of life. When is the right time to euthanize my beloved pet? This is a very personal decision. You never want to do it too soon or too late. Dr. Alice Villalobos will be discussing coming to terms with saying our final farewell right after these few words.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Stop what you're doing and start horsing around. Every week on Pet Life Radio, horse expert and award-winning rider Audrey Pavia will be trotting out great tips on feeding, breeding, and more on everything equestrian. So set a spell and say hey to Audrey and get ready for a darn tootin' galloping good time. Every week on Horsin' Around, on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.
Pets are part of the family, and when traveling with your dog, there's only one magazine to include when packing your doggie's duffel bag, and that's Fido Friendly, the travel and lifestyle magazine for you and your dog. Each bi-monthly issue includes hotel, city, and state reviews, and doggie destinations to explore with your furry companion. Fido Friendly magazine can be found at Borders, Barnes & Noble, PetSmart, Pet Boutiques, and Fido Friendly hotels nationwide. Or you can go online to subscribe at www.FidoFriendly.com. So get traveling with your pet today and leave no dog behind. And remember, Fido Friendly's the only magazine dedicated to the travel lifestyle of man's best friend and the one magazine your dog will thank you for.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and will see you now.
Dr. Alice, thank you so much for being with us. This is a very difficult conversation. A lot of people really never want to have it. But with our pets, it's one that we must have.
Definitely. We really need to talk about it more, and we need to have the entire profession of veterinary medical caregivers reach out and understand the strong attachments that people have to their pets and learn to have better communication skills.
I know many people sometimes will bring in, the budgie or the hamster, and they're distraught and they're crying, and sometimes their family members are saying, but it's just a stupid hamster. Why are you crying? And it doesn't seem to matter what species it is. These are all animals that really are very important to us.
Yes, and I have to say that, with my experience, I'm a former president of the American Association of Human-Animal Bond Veterinarians, that studying this quality of the bond, looking at the different ages of the family, the different relationships, the different dependencies that people have with a companion pet are really important to look at, and the grief that they feel, we have to appreciate it as true grief.
And it
and,
is
you know,
true.
I wanted to mention something. You talked about you never want to do it too soon or too late to end a pet's life. And you know that when people who have euthanized their own pet have been interviewed, 1 in 3 is haunted by the decision, and their angst is over. I think I did. I waited too long, or I think I did it too soon. And so what we're trying to do is help people understand that there is no perfect choice, there's no perfect time, but you try to do the best you can under the circumstances and the situations and just live with the decision. You know, try to accept it as the best you could do. If that helps to comfort anybody who right now is listening and who is haunted by the decision. Many times people cry, they've told me a story that happened 10 or 15 years ago and it comes right up and it hurts them. And because the haunting is continuous.
Dr. Villalobos, what is your response to these people that say, well, I want to just let nature take its course?
Well, natural death is not pretty, and it can be very painful, and I think veterinary medicine needs to help people with those feelings to understand that we can help with the quality of life. If we understand that end-of-life care is all about the pets having a comfortable time, and giving the family the opportunity to have an extended farewell, it should be a medical program like in human hospice where we give provide comfort care and intelligent counseling to help people really provide the best care at home for the pet.
Now, you're mentioning hospice, and I know that you're a part of something called POSPICE. What
right.
is POSPICE?
I actually coined the word because I really think it's a very special word. It says so many things, and people instantly know what we're talking about. But it's more than human hospice care. And in fact, I'd like to distinguish where I disagree with human hospice at this time so that our listeners can understand what we're really talking about.
And what is the difference?
The difference, in my opinion, and I want to say I disagree with the AVMA, the American Medical Association's guidelines for veterinary hospice care, because they follow the parallels of the human hospice. And what they say, and this is a quote, as is the case in human hospice programs, patients must have a terminal illness with a short life expectancy. I disagree with this wholeheartedly, and so does the University of California Human Medical School. Okay, the Human Medical School, a statement by Dr. Fred Myers, who is of the University of California Davis School of Medicine, I want to make a quote here, and he says that palliative care, and that's what they use for the word hospice, because remember what palliation means, and this is for our readers, it's a big long word, a lot of people have never heard of it, but it means just doing the best we can to help our friend, and it has the word pal in it. And I think that all people could understand that, you know, when a person or a pet is dying, we want to help them feel as good as possible during the last days. But in human medicine, they will not allow a person to enter into hospice until they give up all idea of challenging their cancer. And for people who are warriors, this is not acceptable. There are many, many people's families don't want them to give up. And so they're declined or denied the important support that hospice care gives. So here's the quote. Palliative care should not be the last resort. You know, human hospice should not be the last resort, or pet hospice. And quote, it's not about giving up. It's about increased quality of life and enhanced coordination of care. It is not about dying. It is about living with cancer. It's not less care. It's more care. And that's what I want veterinarians to do, is step up to the plate and give end-of-life care pets more care, more attention, more emotional support to the family.
But it's not just a matter of cancer. You know, as I had in the lead-in, there are so many other reasons why at times a pet needs to pass on. And I know quality of life is so difficult. What is your definition of quality of life?
Well, I have a huge scale about quality of life, because people have asked that question for many years, Dr. Cruz. And I was actually joining a committee that was going to try to come up with a quality of life statement, and this was years and years, and they were still kind of arguing about it. And I one day just sat down and wrote I have a column that I write every month, and I wrote this article, it just came out of my heart. So I'm saying, let's just make this simple. And so it's called the HUM scale. It's an acronym. It's got 5 H's and 2 M's. So it's really easy for any of us, nurses, pet caregivers, pet lovers, veterinarians, to think about, what are the 5 H's? Well, hurt. That's number one. We don't want our pets to hurt. And we need to give them the best pain control possible. And there are specialist organizations now, or I should say societies, International Veterinary Pain Management Association, just a great group. And I'm a member of it, and they have really, you know, actually just recently published a fantastic book, Dr. James Gaynor, Veterinary Pain Management. And it's wonderful. And there's a chapter in there by Dr. Tammy Shearer on hospice and palliative care. And I'm happy and proud to say that she refers to my book as one of the 3 sources of information or suggested readings. But hurt, we have to know how to care for pain problems. There are many pathways to pain, and many veterinarians don't understand that. And so if a pet is still in pain after, you know, a visit to the vet and a family doesn't feel that their pet's being managed properly, it's time to get another opinion. And I also want people to know that in human medicine, when a person can't breathe, that is tops on pain. And many times pets come in with desperate grasping for air, and their families have not understood how much pain the pet was in. So I wanted to
very
make sure
distressful.
We know about that. Yes, it's very distressful.
Dr. Villalobos, with this trying to have perception of pain, yes, it's very difficult sometimes for a veterinarian to determine if a pet is in pain. It's easy if all of a sudden you touch a spot and it cries or,
right.
you know, it tries to bite you or scratch you. But there are so many times that our pets are very resistant to showing those signs. They're way too
right.
stoic for our own good and theirs. What are some obvious signs and some not so obvious signs that a pet may be in pain?
Well, we've you know, once again, they've argued over that. And I think the most important thing to do is to say, if I had this condition, would it be painful? And then the answer is yes. And that's called preemptive pain management. If that condition hurts a person, it's going to hurt the pet. If your tooth is killing you because it's sore and your pet's got 3 really bad teeth, he's in terrible pain. And a lot of people don't think so, but they are.
That pet is still eating, or what I oftentimes hear is, my cat, how can it be in pain? It's still purring.
Right, or my dog's tail still wags. I've had people mm-hmm. walk in with a dog with a horrible bone cancer, and he's on 3 legs, and his tail is wagging, and they say, well, he doesn't have any problem. He's wagging his tail. And I say, but the lifted leg is the sign you get from a dog. And they live in present time. Pets live in present time. They really want to please you and be happy, but they have the pain just knocking them, hitting them all the time. And they're trying to, like, see the moment. And it's really important for people to understand that they're very, very difficult to interpret pain. So you need to say, if I had bone cancer, would it hurt me? If I had 3, you know, diseased teeth, would it hurt me? If I had kidney failure and my, you know, values, my blood chemistry was off the wall, would I feel nauseated and, you know, and crumped up? Yes. So that's the answer. That's a simple answer. And that's what I did with the quality of life scale. I've just given a simple answer so that the public, the pet-owning public, can understand what the veterinarians are trying to figure out. The next H is hunger. There should be no hunger. The pet needs to be eating enough, taking enough calories. And so many times, even when the pet is in the hospital and isn't eating, the veterinarian does not supplement enough calories for that pet. So there's a whole, you know, huge place for the profession to move into giving pets enough calories when they're in the hospital and when they're home not eating well.
What are some ways that people can try and get an animal to eat more? I know they oftentimes will open up the cupboard and just try cooking or giving anything.
Right. Well, that's important to offer them many different flavors. But we need to learn how to hand feed a pet. And that's hand feeding is just about coaxing and then just about forcing. You just see what level of ability, you know, you need to have in order to help your pet consume more calories. And then if the pet will just not eat, or if he vomits, you know, the veterinarian can put in a feeding tube. And there's a really easy feeding tube to place right in the side of the neck called an esophageal feeding tube. And the doctors can do it in a very quick procedure that requires anesthesia, but it's very quick. And the pet can now receive all the calories that they need, plus the medications and hydration fluids, you know. And because hydration is a huge, that's the next stage, is hydration. Is the pet dehydrated? And we have to know that pets need to have at least 10 cc's of water for every pound, and that's a lot. And they need to have that just because they're losing that much. That's called this, the insensible loss. And so we need to do this, and we need to make sure that our clients understand how to help the pet take in the fluids. And many times, in hospice care, we're teaching people how to give hydration subcutaneously to pets. They really accept this quite nicely.
I know people many times will be coming in with a pet that's not been drinking well, going, well, I've been getting a syringe and I've been syringing water into the mouth. Why is that not appropriate?
Well, people, I wouldn't say it's not appropriate. I think people are very good caretakers and very good nurses. The big problem
is what are some of the problems?
Enough.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah, they're not giving enough. You know, we say, well, you need to give them 10 cc's per pound. And they go, oh, okay, we can do that. And, you know, magically the pet's much better. So, but if often enough, they can't get enough into a kitty cat. You know, cats, they're not easy. They're not from this planet. They don't understand things. And so often enough, we have to give a relaxing, you know, medications for the pet so they can accept some of the force feeding and the fluid, you know, intake. But it's always better to go with subcutaneous fluids if the owner can learn from our nursing staff how to inject, you know, how to put a needle under the skin and then allow the fluids to go in by gravity. It takes about 5 or 10 minutes, and it's really a wonderful way to keep them hydrated. The next thing
I had a cat myself who needed that. And
oh, you did?
It was,
yeah.
And oftentimes you're telling clients about doing this. And I really found when I had to do it for Zachary, he was my old boy kitty who had kidney failure. And with that little cat, that I found that it was almost a time of bonding, of giving him the fluid injection, a time that I could pet him and love him. And cats and dogs really don't seem to mind once that owner is shown how to get that injection quickly, you know, under the skin, that needle under the skin is like, oh, that wasn't so bad.
Right, right. We do have some problem homes, and then we send our nurses to the house to see what's going on, what are the dynamics, see if we can get the pet into a little quieter area, calm him down. We use rescue remedy, which is some little drops that calm down the, you know, the balance out the emotions. Sometimes we use little sedatives and some of their pain medications. We just have the family give the pain medication a little higher dose right before the fluids are necessary.
You had mentioned rescue remedy. I love that because that is just really from flower essences, if I remember correctly.
Yes. It's a Bach flower.
So it's very natural.
Mm-hmm. Right. And we just had the occasion to use it yesterday. We have a cancer patient who has issues with seeing. This dog has recently had some very tough surgeries on the cornea. It's a little pug, you know, with the eyes that pop out. And the family, you know, is real sad because he can't see and he's very tense and anxious and he fell in the pool and he's bumping into things and they just thought about maybe it's time for him to go because his quality of life is so poor. And so we put him on some rescue remedy and he just sat on his little blanket and was just as happy, wagged his tail. And the family said he hasn't wagged his tail in months. And so we just talked to them today on a follow-up and he's already showing that he's much happier.
Wonderful.
So, yeah, so it's nice. And we also added another, you know, a couple of other medications that are going to be the next steps to see if we can reduce his pain because he also has arthritis and because he's an old guy. And we added amantadine and Medicam, which is, like an aspirin type drug that's very gentle. And those two act synergistically to help reduce pain because the family feels that his eyes hurt him. So that's real important. And amantadine is also an antiviral, which might help his immune system a little bit, too. So the
Dr.
next
Villalobos,
age,
could you mention, right now you're talking about amantadine, which is really a human medication that veterinarians are using off-label in pets. Oftentimes people want to do more, and they look at their own medicine cabinet going, oh, I was giving this medication, maybe naproxen, for their own pain, and they want to give that to their pet. Could you address that? using human medications.
Yes, the biggest sin of all is someone wants to give a Tylenol tablet to their cat. You know, they think, oh, it helped my headache, it helped my, you know, and cats are, you know, as I say, they're not from this planet, and they will die from one Tylenol tablet or capsule because their blood just gets, turns brown with a very sad, horrible reaction. So it's really important to never medicate a pet with without the doctor overseeing that and approving it. Just call in and say, can I give him some Pepcid? And then you'll find out that a cat needs a quarter of a 10 milligram of Pepcid, but a dog needs to have 10 milligrams per 20 pounds. So we need to know that the species are different than the human, and many people, you know, can eyeball things and cut it down. Maybe a cat would get, you know, 25% or 10% of a human dose. And a dog, you know, if he's a 50-pound dog, maybe a third of the human dose. But that is really important to talk to the doctor about it. Sometimes they need to have, like what the drug you just mentioned, Naprosyn, it's every other day because the patients don't clear it as fast.
So they really have to be careful and ask. So you're talking about hurt and hunger and hydration.
And
what else
hygiene.
Is important?
We hygiene. About hygiene. Yeah, the patient needs to be kept clean and brushed and not have foul odors. And we don't want to have their skin have those open wounds called, you know, we call them bed sores or decubital ulcers. And we need to rotate pets who are not moving. We need to get them up on these wonderful slings. There's one called Evans cart. It's fabulous. The pet can sit, a big dog can sit standing, and then you can, you know, roll the cart along, and he can start to use his little legs just to kind of move forward. It's a wonderful thing to help the blood circulation, and we need to turn the pet over every 2 hours if they're really, really not moving. And then the biggest H of all, which, you know, I want you to know that all these H's are equal, you know, but the most important one is no hurt, happiness. The pet needs
to enjoy life.
Joy. Yeah, joy. Joy and interest in what's going on. If the pet's responsive to things around the family, you know, toys, if a little kitty just looks at the laser light or wants to make a little, you know, efforts to greet you, if when you pet him, he purrs, when a dog wags his tail, if he sees you, you know, if they look up and see you. And they love you, and they'll show that. But if the pet is depressed, lonely, anxious, you know, if they're bored or if they're afraid, that is not a good quality hospice. And I really feel that we need to change those statuses. And you can if you talk to your doctor about it. And if your doctor doesn't seem to be sensitive to it, you go get another doctor. Many times that other doctor is in the same practice. And or a nurse, you know, could come and at least describe things to the doctor better, and then maybe the doctor can figure it out. But it's really important to keep the pet socially involved in the family activities. You know, if they're, you know, in a bed that's isolated, like in a room in the back, that's not what we're talking about for hospice. The pet should be right where you are when they're in their end-of-life care. If you're watching TV, have the bed right there. If you're eating in the kitchen, put the bed there. And this is what I recommend.
Well, we've been talking right now with Dr. Alice Villalobos about a subject that all pet owners would prefer never have to discuss, but we must, when to say the final farewell. We'll be right back after these few messages talking about, now you've decided it's time for the pet to pass, what does it actually involve? We'll be right back.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
There's nothing like a shaggy dog, baby. They're shagatelic. And this is the place to find out how to have harmony in the household with your pets. Oh, yeah. So stop by our pad every week and get switched on, baby. Switched on to the show that's all about attitude. Oh, behave. With your groovy host, pet edutainer Arden Moore. Yeah, baby, yeah. Every week on demand on PetLifeRadio.com.
Greetings, human. What planet am I? Meyer.
Welcome to Pet Planet. Here's a copy of Pet Planet Magazine, Florida's most informative and fun pet resource magazine. It features heartwarming stories and informative articles from local and national pet experts.
Excellent.
Pet Planet Magazine offers Operation Planet Rescue, helping rescued pets find new homes. And it's available at 500 locations in South and Central Florida and 24/7 on the internet at PetPlanetMagazine.com. If you're out and about with your pet, you may be featured in paparazzi, candid pictures of you and your pet. For up-to-date pet-friendly events, activities, and pet-related services and products, Pet Planet Magazine is your final destination.
I shall take this magazine home with me.
Back to your home planet?
No, to my condo in Boca.
Pet Planet Magazine. Check them out at www.petplanetmagazine.com or 352-394-8578. It's out of this world.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and will see you now.
Dr. Alice Villalobos, you have been giving us great information on a subject that's very difficult for many people to discuss, when to have the final farewell. You've been talking about our H's, the H's being hurt, hunger, hydration, enjoyment of life, happiness, and taking care of themselves. What if all of a sudden we've now decided, and this won't be all of a sudden, because you know it's been coming on, you
right.
decided that my pet is not enjoying life. It doesn't have the quality of life that I want for it.
Yeah, things aren't working. You know, before we go into that, I want to mention the two M's on the scale,
okay.
the hunger
oh, yes.
scale. The first M is mobility issues, and I want you to know that, you know, it really ranges. I mean, there are people who are in wheelchairs who just have a wonderful life. So we know that many pets whose back legs don't work and have a great life if they've got a nice helping family, you know, or one of those mobility carts that really helps them out. Little animals like cats and small dogs don't have to be walking. They can be carried, and they're happy. So mobility is a big issue. It's really what the family can do and how the pet mentally handles it. And then the other last M is really important, more good days than bad days. More good days than bad days. And this is where we come to that final decision, which you're asking me about. When the pet has many bad days in a row, too many, like three or four, and then the one's good, and then there's another crummy ones, that's when the quality of life is way too compromised. And the you know, enjoying the human-animal bond is no longer possible, and the family must be made aware that the end is near. And, you know, families need to make that decision, and that's just what we're talking about. I think if we take the scale and score it 1 to 10 on each one of these parameters, the decision can be made. And often enough, I recommend that each family member takes this quality of life scale, which is now available, by the way, online on a URL through Veterinary Practice News. You just put them up on and boom, it's coming out with their new .com issue. And you can just click it and you can download it. So you can use this tool. Nurses can use it. Doctors can use it. Family members and relatives and friends. Because sometimes we have a blind spot. But the decision needs to be made if the pet is suffering. And we owe the pet a peaceful and painless passing. And if you achieve that, then it's really okay. We never know if it's too soon or too late, you know. I think we all have to live with the fact that we're gonna wonder. But we shouldn't be haunted if you make the decision with a consensus, you know, if everybody agrees, you know, we're going down this road and it's really, you know, gonna end in a bad way. It's like we would like to put a pet to sleep with gentle euthanasia, which means well death. It's a gift of a good death. We would like to do that before the pet has a crisis. You know, if you know he can't breathe and you know, oh, gee, tomorrow he's going to be coughing up blood, let's let him go. Or we tell people, do a DNR. If something bad happens, then don't resuscitate, just like they do with humans.
One of the things you mentioned, I think it's so very true, is that we can have blind spots. And
yes.
I'll oftentimes tell my own clients that, okay, imagine you are your best friend, somebody that's known you and your pet for years. So you as your best friend, this third party that's looking out into your situation, what would they say? Would they say, you know, this pet really is not enjoying life, does not have that quality of life. And I tell people this is one of the most loving decisions that they can ever make, because they're not thinking about themselves, they're thinking about their pet. And I've had to make the decision myself. I had to make it for Zachary, and it was very difficult for me because, okay, just one more shot, just one more thing. I'm a veterinarian. I can save this kitty. I can make it last longer. And then I found looking into Zachary's little eyes when they just seemed dull. He just wasn't enjoying life.
I've been criticized, in my book about looking into their eyes, but I really feel that there is a telepathy communication between our pets and our own personal self. And in fact, there was a book written about it that was on the cover of the Newsweek magazine. It was called The Secret Lives of Dogs. And it was a fantastic book, and I didn't want it to end because it talked all about that communication that we all enjoy with our pet every day. And I don't think we should ever undermine that. There are some, people who don't think that pets think or have emotions. And of course, they dismiss what we're talking about today. And I would just say, stand up for what you believe in and what your gut feeling tells you. And you can look in your pet's eyes and you can see what they want.
I think what we all want is to wake up in the morning and our pet very calmly passed in its sleep without any pain. Alas,
right.
Most of the time, we need to step in and make the decision that, yes, it needs to pass, and it needs to pass today. Dr. Villalobos,
right.
Could you explain a little bit what the procedure actually involves? People hear about, trying to have fatal injections for people on death row and all of the controversy. It doesn't seem to be that way in veterinary medicine.
Right. And in fact, I'm not sure if you kept up with that. They've wanted to involve veterinarians in helping the death row procedure go better, because recently there was a botched one. I'm not sure if you know about that, but veterinary medicine wants to stay away from that because, our patients are not humans. Our patients are pets, and society accepts this euthanasia, which means well death. It's a Greek derivative. If we can create a well death for our pets, and I love the way you just said it, Dr. Cruz, a loving decision. It truly is. It's a gift. I always tell people it's a very hard gift to give. But what we're trying to do is help our pet pass over to the Rainbow Bridge, and where there is no suffering and no pain and no aging and no cancer and no organ failure. And when we look at that they're released from their body, I think we're helping people go through the motion of euthanasia. So let's talk about that final visit. I call it the final call. We're using the quality of life scale. Everyone realizes it's time to make the final call. When people feel they can't go through it, and many times they just, I've talked to people ahead of time. We always want to make sure they know what they're going to do with the remains of the body, whether we're going to have cremation, which is to have private ashes returned to us for a memory, whether we're going to have burial, or if we're going to have the pet go with all the other patients in that hospital for a community type of cremation. So we want to talk about that.
And people do need to keep in mind that they may want to take it home and bury it in the backyard. But where I live in Southern California, we have a lot of coyotes. And I always tell people, I really don't care if you take it home and you bury it in your backyard, but you're probably going to not be living in that house for years and years. And how would you like somebody to be planting roses in the backyard and years from now dig up your pet's body, or a coyote or some other animal digs in the backyard and finds it? They need to think beyond, that immediate decision, let me just bury it in the backyard.
Right. Yes, especially with a mobile society that we have right now. Very, very, people are just moving every few years. And so you would be leaving the ashes or the pet's body. I actually feel if people want to bury, is to go ahead and have the cremation and get the ashes back and then bury the ashes. And many times I tell my clients to put the ashes in a really nice pot and put a beautiful flowering plant there, like acacias or something else just beautiful that comes up all the time. And just remember, it will remind you of the blossoming love that you had. The way I look at pets many times is when we can understand when they are alive, they're very much alive. Even when they're in hospice, they're very much alive. And people who have that horrible thing with anticipatory grief, they're so sad. sometimes they're not even enjoying their pospis because they're just thinking about the future, where the pet is like a flower, you know, and you smell a beautiful flower, you know it's going to be gone in a week, it'll be wilted, but you still enjoy the fragrance. And I try to help people stay in present time and be, you know, understanding that the pet is very much alive, like old people, they're very much alive until they go.
And it's a circle of life.
Yes, it is. This is all so natural. And I also, you know, I think we all have certain things we tell our clients, but when they're grieving, but I talk about as much as sad as you are right now, it's because you've been so happy with this pet. And that the love and the grief, you know, they equal the dimension. And that we just know that it's just part of a rich life. If you've had love, you will have loss if you're not the one that dies first.
If you could mention the passing on process. I'm sorry, we're getting a little close for time, and you have so many important things to say.
Oh, we do. Okay, so I personally love to sedate the patient in front of the family so the pet never leaves them. I feel that the human-animal bond should never be severed for even 2 minutes. So when the pet comes in and he's ready to go and everyone's decided, we give the pet a very heavy sedative. And then we can either put a catheter, an IV catheter, or if he's so dehydrated that we know our nurses will never find the catheter, then we could give the injection either into the abdomen or into the heart. But the pet has to be completely under sedation where he has no pain. And that is the doctor's decision. And I actually disagree with any doctor that takes a pet away from the family for an IV catheter and then brings them back in the room. I really think that is separating the human-animal bond for convenience. I think that we can deliver the anesthetic very safely to a sedated pet. And watching a pet fall asleep in the exam room and knowing he's not falling asleep to die really allows the family to have, like, you know, a step-by-step process. Sometimes I give a light sedative first for about 10 or 15 minutes and a heavy sedative. So it's just a real gentle way that the pet just starts to fall asleep and the family has time. People need that time at times.
Now, some people don't want to be present when the pet passes on. It very much is okay. And some people just can't do that. They're so distraught. And I'll tell people that this is the pet's time. It's not your time as such. So if you think that you can't handle it, let me just gently, quickly take it from you and remember the good times.
Yeah, and that's okay. In fact, most people don't mind being there with a gentle sedative. And even the second sedative, they'll be happy just to see their pet fall asleep. And then they can leave when the final injection is given. And then we invite them to come back afterwards and see the pet in a wake. And I think that I really want to point this out. There is not enough reverence and ceremony in the departure of pets these days at the time of euthanasia. As a profession, we are actually being asked to not only be the healer, but we also are the funeral director. You know, I hate to even use the word, but giving euthanasia, giving the gift of death, actually puts us, you know, not as an executioner, but as the person who brings life to an end, gently and kindly. But the fact is that veterinarians are often contorted in their feelings. They have emotional fatigue. It's called compassion fatigue. It's very hard for some doctors. They've had such an attachment to the client and the pet that they're going to lose that relationship too. So there's a lot of grieving going on with the family, the staff, the doctors, over this pet that has united, you know, them in a relationship. So we need to have, I believe, time for a wake. And I usually have flowers and candles in the room. I read poetry to my clients about pet love. There's two wonderful books I use. Angel Whiskers is for kitties, and Angel Paw Prints is for dogs by Laurel Hunt, and they're both available from Amazon.com. Laurel Hunt. And these books, the poetry in them is wonderful. It has a rainbow bridge. And we just sometimes I'll come in and sit on the floor, you know, and read a poem and go and take care of another patient and come back in and just let people know they can stay as long as they need to.
And it is important for people to realize, as you're talking about the grieving process, that it is okay to grieve. It's not just a cat, a dog, a hamster, or a bird. It's been something very important in their lives. And how long they're going to grieve is going to be extremely variable. they say, oh, it's just a dog. Go out and get yourself another dog. I'll tell people, it's like if you were to have a spouse that died, people aren't going to say, oh, just go out and get another husband. You know, you're going to have your own time. Where
right.
can people call, where can people go if they need assistance with the grieving process?
Well, I really think they should go to their veterinarian, but so many veterinarians are not, you know, prepared yet. There's a new organization called Veterinary Family Practice, and members of the American Association of Human Animal Bond Veterinarians and members of the Ethics Society for Veterinary Medicine. All those members are very skilled at speaking properly to the bereft family. But there is pet loss hotlines, and those hotlines are often run from the veterinary schools by the students. Now, they're not, you know, experienced counselors, but they have been trained to talk to the person who is grieving. And then I highly recommend that every veterinarian has at least two or three pet loss counselors, you know, family counselors who know how to handle grief and get different age family members. Sometimes it's a child, sometimes it's a widow, sometimes it's a husband and wife who have no children. Sometimes it's a person who's alone, lives alone, and has really treasured their pet. Young single females are the hardest hit when their pet dies, because I believe it's because we have so much maternal instinct. You know, in the old days, women would be saddled with 10 or 15 children by the time they were, you know, 35 or 40. And all that motherhood many times is channeled into a career and a pet, and when that pet passes, there is a lot of grieving going on.
Major void.
Oh, absolutely. And we need to refer to good counselors. I can tell you about Lightning. I had a kitty cat who was 18 years old. He had cancer, and we were able to cure it. But he developed kidney failure as he got older. And his mom, you know, was giving him the fluids. And one day she called, and Lightning had just no color to him. And she had to make a huge decision. And it was decided that she would put him to sleep. And she was at a emergency clinic that had kind of a very matter-of-fact style. And she felt really horrified that the procedure was you know, very matter-of-fact. And so she's still healing from that. And I believe it's been well over, it could have been 2.5 months ago, but every Wednesday she comes to see me. She brings cookies, and we sit and talk, and the staff talks to her and hugs her, and we let her hold a puppy or two or a kitty. And she told me just yesterday that she's feeling so glad that we have been able to give her this time to not be separated from our companionship, because we had a long, you know, I think 2 years. We were seeing her on a routine basis, semi-routine, that she just explained that she wished that all veterinary facilities had compassion. But she experienced the quick, officious methodology of some emergency clinics. And I'm embarrassed about that, and I have to say that I think that no matter how much of a rush we're in, we need to take time and be sensitive to people's emotions.
Well, Dr. Ellis Villalobos, you have given us some marvelous information, things that are a little difficult to listen to, but with pets really becoming part of the family, we need to be able to let them pass when that time is right with the dignity. So
right.
I appreciate very much you being on the show today. I know it's going to be hard for people to listen to, but hopefully it will help their pets when that time comes. You've been listening to The Pet Doctor on PetLifeRadio.com. Thank you very much, and I hope that your pet lives with you for a very long, good quality of life. Thank you for listening.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life. Because they're a member of the family, keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. On demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.